as I mentioned, we're going to take a look, kind of a hard look at the abduction hypothesis, and we're going to take a somewhat critical look at some of the UFO groups who've sprung up around the world and what their motives are and the kind of message that they're spreading.
All right. I want to thank you, George. Thanks very much for taking time out of your day and talking.
Thank you, Chuck. We'll talk to you again.
You take bye. Care. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, George Knapp. George, he is a real rare bird, I think, in the media business, because the man eats and sleeps news. He is probably one of the hardest working journalists I have ever come upon. He's always out running with a camera, and he works a tremendous long day. And on weekends, he's working. He loves what he does. He tells me he gets up in the morning and wants to go to work. That's super. But it's people like George that are, in my opinion, keeping a lot of information before the American public that would be swept under the rug. In the current issue of the For the People magazine, there is a reproduction or a transcript. I was searching for the word, a transcript of our interview with Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar was employed, as he says, by the U.S. Navy, by Navy intelligence. He was working on a captured or an alien vehicle that they have. They still have it out at Groom Lake in Nevada near Las Vegas. And this has been documented by several other individuals who have worked there and who said that, yes, they knew him and they saw him there and he worked there. I happen to know of a gentleman who is a scientist who worked on Project Blue Book and now feels safe enough to say to me off the air, and he may come on the air soon, that the entire project was sanitized. Sanitized meaning that the good stuff was left out. What's coming, what I believe, is that there is a very, very fast forward movement afoot of the world's governments to let us know that we are not alone. And in my belief further, there will be, as time goes on, a closening of all of the people who live on planet Earth, the global community, if you please. And instead of fighting global warfare, we're probably going to start worrying about them. We may worry about them. I think Mr. Reagan, probably Reagan, kept trying to warn us about it in his speeches. He kept saying over and over and over again, an alien force, an outside force would unite the world. He kept saying it. And nobody ever listened to him. They didn't pay any attention because they were too busy doing whatever it is that stroked their ego, but he kept saying it over and over and over and over again. Okay. So now here's Ed Walters, who has seen these puppies up in the sky and has written an excellent book, by the way, he and his wife. And it's out. It's at your bookstore. It's called The Gulf Breeze Sightings. But I gotta believe that we are in a fast-forward mode, and there's going to be, as the world becomes more technologically oriented and gets to be a closer global community, there's probably going to be some pretty heavy-duty changes in society as we know it. NASA would not talk to you at all about UFOs up until about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote them, and suddenly I get a letter back that says, because of the interest about UFOs, we now have a file, and they sent me 2 inches of documents.
Anything in there that corroborates any of the... I mean, I know I have heard rumors about astronauts who have had sightings. Do they actually admit any of this in any of the documents that you received?
Well, many astronauts have written letters, and some of the letters have been published.
Mm-hmm.
And that's common stuff. In one of the recent shuttles, there was a transmission that was captured by a number of shortwave and amateur radio enthusiasts where the commander said the alien craft has pulled up alongside of us, and then immediately... he said, I'm going to such and such channel and scrambling. And then the rest of the transmission could not be heard.
Mm-hmm.
But that was captured on tape.
Right.
So something's going on.
Yeah.
We believe that by 1992, America will be told in full what's going on. We think we pretty well know what it is.
Yeah.
But we don't think that the media will tell the truth for at least another year and a half.
Yeah.
So the schedule is right on the money.
Yeah.
NASA very openly had the program Was There Life on Mars.
Uh-huh.
4,000 NASA employees received the program, and they're sending out videotapes about it.
Wow.
You know, so
it's creeping out there, isn't it?
That's right.
And your show is actually kind of like pushing it like an old bulldog, just pushing along, trying to make it go a little faster.
Well, we're confused, and we'd like to know what it's all about.
Right.
Now,
anyhow, the wild bull of China might be a real creature, according to new evidence. The legend goes back 3,000 years. A man-like ape. It was not seen recently, but hair samples found during the filming of a documentary in remote China, compared with synthetic fibers and hair from other species, including primates and humans, indicates that the hair was neither human nor ape, but more closely matched human hair. The analysis indicate a high likelihood of the existence of these creatures. 6 to 7 feet tall. 500 to 600 pounds, covered with reddish hair. Walks erect, eats plants, uses no tools. Will they eventually find a creature? Sure. There's been pictures of them.
Sure.
Month Omni, which is devoted to the issue of Mars and going to Mars and the politics of men and manned and unmanned missions to Mars, there is an article depicting an unmanned rover of the Red Planet, which in this scenario, the article is written by Mitch Berman. He sets this NASA rover down at Sidonia and has it explore the face of the pyramids. Well, the problem is that he ascribes the pyramids and the research to one Carl Sagan.
Right.
And not to us.
Correct.
And the numbers that he uses in the article make it very clear that he had to have read our research, because we are the only ones who have published specific numbers on Sidonia. So it's beginning to look as if the second phase of any discovery is coming to the fore. You know, the first phase is when they say, oh, you are what? You know?
Yeah.
The second phase is they say we knew it all along, and the third phase is when they begin to take credit for it.
Yeah.
So, I do not want to ascribe, by the way, this to Carl directly. I have no knowledge that he is responsible, but I do think that it is up to the editors of Omni, when they commission an article and when they print it, to have accurate facts and to ascribe to Carl Sagan the work on Sidonia, on the pyramids, and all the other things that are there, is the height of editorial irresponsibility, if not journalistic, shall we say, I don't know what the term would be. It's not the kind of journalism that I ever knew.
Richard, before we run out of time, please, anything you find out, let us know. There's millions of people out here just eager to find out what you're coming up with.
Well, you can help me if you would. One of the things I would like to see happen is that people get a copy of this month's issue of Omni, which is devoted to Mars,
sure,
and they read the Berman article, and then they drop a line to the editors of Omni. I have written my letter, because I think it's important that the integrity of the process be maintained, and the people who for many, many years have been our most hostile critics and have done many things that were beyond normal intellectual discourse to keep people from taking this problem seriously, that they not suddenly be allowed to simply walk in the front door and take credit for a very fundamental paradigm shift.
Well, I record this every time, every day, especially on this topic, so I have also documentation on that, and I'll be more than glad to write my note to them.
If people could write to Omni, and what I would like to see happen is that the editors not only admit the error, but they also invite us to write an article describing what, in fact, it is that we have found.
All right. Jay, we're out of time. Thank you very, very much for the call.
Author and scientist Richard Hoagland is my guest. I'm Chuck Hart. Continue.
Yes, let's pick up that author part. The book, The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever, which I did, that describes these Mars things. Let me just close off the thought I was going to say before. The fact that during his administration, President Reagan mentioned UFOs and aliens not once, but five separate times.
Well, now, the skeptics say that's just baloney and poppycock, and that he was just using that in a speech.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could say he was using it as a metaphor, all right? Perfectly valid point. And we would unite in the face of the common threat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you could say that was all wonderful poetic illusion and metaphor and whatever, except look at the world in front of us every night on television. What is happening to the planet that has been at each other's throats for 40 plus years? The point I'm making is that what Reagan was saying is not a theoretical, metaphorical discussion. The things that he was talking about are actually coming to pass before our very eyes. The problem is that they are being attributed not to what he said would happen, but to other forces, basically economic forces. If you come from the perspective, as I do, and the members of the teams that I've been leading now, in terms of looking at these objects on Mars, if you come from that perspective and you know because the mathematics are telling you so, that these things are really there, and if you believe, as I believe, because we've done it, you know, ourselves, we have brought this data to the attention of the appropriate authorities, not only in this government, but also in the Soviet Union, and the stories of what we did and how we did it are contained in the Monuments of Mars. If you have that as a background, you view what's going on in the world from a slightly different perspective. Is it not conceivable that the world with which we are, you know, undergoing such fascinating change, is moving toward a kind of a common unity, not because of the economics of certain situations, but because of other things that we are not yet privy to? And then that raises the specter that if you have a major economic conference in Houston of the G7, and one of the members chooses at that particular moment to sit down in front of the press in Europe and discuss UFOs, is it not at least plausible that maybe the reason is because those guys know something and they're trying to maybe send some kind of a signal? Again, this is all speculative, hypothetical, but I raise the issue because I think it's too important to not be discussed and considered, particularly in the light of what we know mathematically is present on Mars.
Okay. You were asked to give a lecture or a program at NASA, and you did.
To give several.
Yeah. Now, when are you going back to NASA and giving another program?
Oddly enough, I was invited back 2 days ago. I got a call from the Lewis Research Center, which is where I gave my last presentation, which is available on videotape, and we can talk about that in a second. In fact, I do want to talk about that. I got a call from the education director who is sponsoring a major national NASA education conference at the Lewis Research Center in Cleveland, Ohio, in September, lasting a full week. He has asked me to present our Mars data and the results of our research to that date on September 11th to close the conference. In fact, his exact words were, he says, I want to send them off with a bang. Sort of interesting. These are the same folks, by the way, that conducted an interview with me in March, which I heard is going to be finished editing in about a week, will then be set up on the official NASA satellite and downlinked to, I guess, several hundred PBS stations around this country and in Canada and I guess even in Europe, describing in great detail what we think we have found, the process whereby we have found it, the mathematics, the measurements, the social implications, and what we feel is important in terms of verification efforts up to and including going back to Mars. It is the same information that Dr. John Kleinberg, when he introduced me at Lewis for my formal presentation the following day, said had been part of the president's decision to go to Mars. And that was his words, not mine. I was extremely flattered. We've tried to track down if, in fact, that, in fact, is, you know, has been the case. And it's very difficult to get any confirmation, anything like this. So at the moment, it's Dr. Kleinberg's remarks and perhaps his opinion. My point, Chuck, is that there seems to be a groundswell of official NASA interest in what we have been doing and what we and our colleagues have found on these Viking photographs that are 14 years old. At the same time that a major government is sitting down and telling the press that UFOs, quote, are real because they chase them with F-16s and they can't catch them. It raises in my mind the provocative question, what is really going on?
Okay. Fascinating. You know, there's a number of people who are skeptics, and they say all of this is just absolutely hogwash, and no matter what it seems you do, they attack you. One particular skeptic organization, as a just a gesture of kindness, I sent them a copy of your tape. And I got back a three-page scathing letter from this guy, you know, like I was some kind of an idiot, you know. And all I did as a gesture of kindness was send him the tape. I said, you know, here's a tape for you.
This is the NASA Lewis briefing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what do you have to do, or what do you think's going to happen to convince people that there is something to all of this stuff? You know, we hear, whenever somebody tells you a first-hand story, it is called by scientists and doctors anecdotal. You know, that's their term of saying, well, that's just some layperson who doesn't know their left hand from their right hand spouting off their mouth. But... Okay, I'm Chuck Carter, and we are back. I'm talking to Richard Hoagland, author and scientist. Richard, we got about 7 minutes left, so let's use it wisely. You were saying before the break.
Well, I was saying that when you look at this whole panoply of events, when you look at what we now know and what NASA keeps inviting us to show them, and that I can't stress too strongly. I mean, it's one thing for the skeptics to sit off on the sideline and keep throwing rocks, but when the very agency, which themselves are throwing rocks for many years, turns around and now begins to invite you in the front door to brief their engineers and their scientists and invite you repeatedly to come back, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, pun intended, to realize that maybe, just maybe, you know something that they want to find out. Because we have been doing our homework. Now, well, you reported to me that listeners had called you regarding Carl Sagan's appearance on CNN a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Saying something to the effect that he had hinted or indicated or mentioned the possibility now of a formerly inhabited Mars.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody knows the date and the tape and the program on which that statement aired, if they could contact you and you could then forward it to me, I'd be very interested. There are two national reporters now who are doing major stories on our work, and that together with Carl's interesting mention in the Omni magazine issue devoted to Mars, the July issue, makes me wonder if maybe Dr. Sagan has not been looking at that tape. And in fact, he's very quietly changing his position to position himself in the correct manner when, in fact, the new data comes in from Mars Observer. We would appreciate knowing what show he was on, what exactly he said, and the more specific you can be, if you have a copy of the thing taped, be fantastic. We would love to see it or hear it.
Yeah, people are probably wondering, why don't you just call up Carl Sagan and ask him? The answer is, you ain't going to get through.
Well, Carl and I used to be friends.
Uh-huh.
And then some funny things happened. You see, Carl for many years has been taking public credit for the Pioneer plaque, which of course Eric Burgess and I conceived. He acknowledged our conception of that in the March 1972 issue of Science magazine, and then he had a kind of an attack of amnesia. And ever since, it's been, you know, the thought occurred without mentioning to whom the thought occurred, so the relations are somewhat strained between Carl and myself.
I'm sorry. Well, I of course, he's a very well-known figure, and a number of his articles, or articles that he has caused to be published, I think have had pretty good impact on the general public. I think that people are starting to realize there might be something to all of this environment and pollution stuff after all. I think he has to maintain that kind of a profile, but I'm sorry there was a misunderstanding. Hope you can patch it up someday.
Well, I think when we're on Mars and everyone can see what's there, I think there may be an interesting rapprochement. But in the meantime, if he, in fact, is changing his position and is doing it in public, it could certainly be helpful in our political campaign on the Hill to get the proper congressional attention on this problem, to get Mars Observer back there, to make sure that NASA does take the pictures, and that we all see in 1993 exactly what is lying there waiting for us.
Wow. Very, very fascinating stuff. All right, Richard, I want to thank you for being with us this hour. And, of course, we are going to speak again probably in a week or so. Richard was The science advisor to Walter Cronkite, and you used to see him quite a bit on TV during the early missions to the moon and what have you. He's a fine gentleman, and we are delighted that he has volunteered to be our science advisor, for which, by the way, he is donating his services, and we thank him for that. Regarding the monuments of Mars, you wrote a book called The Monuments of Mars. We've talked about that on this program before. I understand that Carl Sagan now has a quote, was quoted in the current issue of Omni magazine. What was the exact quote?
Well, the quote is in reference to the beckoning pyramids of Mars, and the writer, who was not Sagan, but a writer named Mitch Berman, who wrote a piece for Omni in this month's issue, July issue, which is dedicated to Mars, and looks at the scenario for an unmanned rover mission, like a JPL robotic mission to Mars, specifically sets this rover down at the taboo place in terms of the traditional planetary science community of which Sagan is a member, namely Cydonia, and has this rover running around looking at, among other things, the face and the pyramid. What kind of irritated some of us who have been working very hard to gain a credibility for the scientific investigation of these objects is the linking of them in the Omni story with Carl, who would rather be caught dead than be associated, at least in terms of his comments on the record heretofore. There are a couple of reporters who are pursuing Sagan specifically for comment to see whether he is going to send a letter to Omni asking for a retraction, since he has never made that comment in association with the Cydonia objects. And it'll be kind of interesting to see, you know, what falls out of the woodwork here.
All right. Under the Freedom of Information Act, some of them from the FBI, reporting on things that the media still will not cover. These documents exist. I've seen them. I have copies of them. So How do you argue with these government documents?
The way I argue is that no reputable world-renowned astronomer believes the way you do. None. Zero. My daughter knows them all.
Ask your daughter to ask Dr. Carl Sagan.
But he certainly doesn't.
Ask your daughter to ask Dr. Carl Sagan what was meant by the quote in this month's Omni magazine. Just ask her that question. Ask her to call Dr. Sagan and ask him.
I don't know if she can call him.
Well,
I know she's met him at symposiums.
Well,
and things
just
like that.
I'm just telling you, I don't want to argue with you or your daughter. Go look at this month's Omni magazine, and also there's another article in Boys Life magazine this month about some very, very interesting things. But Dr. Sagan is quoted in Omni magazine. And she needs to go look at that quote, and then perhaps she needs to ask him, why did you say that?
But he just wrote no more than 2 months ago in Parade magazine, which virtually all the top, you know, newspapers and...
Yeah, sir, I understand. I don't want to argue with you. I'm just saying it's there. Go look at it. Go to the newsstand and get the current issue of Omni. Okay? Hey, I appreciate the call. Also, disagreements are fun. We'll be back. The recent article that Gannett just published in their chain of newspapers. I got mine out of Florida today. And it quotes, it says, Representative Robert Rowe, chairman of the House Science and Space Committee, told Florida Today it looked like they had to be fashioned by some intelligent beings, unquote, referring to the monuments of Mars, the Egyptian-like formations. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in the article. Dr. Mark Carlotto has, and Errol Torin. These are folks who work for the Defense Department that have done all kinds of work on these monuments of Mars. And the things that they have found, the May 15th, 1988 cover story from an American publication called Applied Optics had Mark Carlotto, the computer imaging expert with the Analytical Sciences Corporation in Reading, Massachusetts, went into lengthy technical detail explaining how he was able to conclude the formation was symmetrical down to its alleged teeth. meaning the face on Mars. Anyhow, fascinating stuff.
There is an analog, an eerie analog, meaning almost a duplicate of Silbury Hill in the complex on Mars in the Cydonia region that we have been analyzing. We have done orthographic studies, we have done measurements, we have found this redundant geometry connects this landform, which is a low hill with an outside perimeter, kind of like a ditch, and then an inner perimeter located around the top that has very, very similar proportions to Silbury Hill. But much more fundamental, the measurement of the units by which this object on Earth was laid out are part and parcel of the exact same units that the objects on Mars are laid out. Alexander Thom's famous called megalithic yard, 2.72 British feet.
And I'm very excited to hear of your discovery on Mars. I mean, that's really quite incredible.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted Chuck to try to arrange this afternoon and why I thought it would be useful for us to meet in this manner is that again and again I've been telling his audience and other audiences, science is a process for figuring things out. And what I wanted them to hear live with no rehearsal was two people who were trying to figure out separate phenomena that seem to potentially have a common understanding or a common source and working toward understanding that commonality almost live and in real time.
And you could have lunch on the moon and come back in time for dinner on the Earth. Now, I don't know why he would tell me that. He seemed to be very, very bright, very well-spoken, like he knew what he was talking about, and that's what he told me. Now, maybe he was a crank.
And that was Northrop.
That's what got us started on our quest to find out what in the world was going on.
Uh-huh.
And from what we understand, there already has been leaked the fact that we do have a plane called the Aurora. It does go about 4,000 miles an hour. It takes off from a runway, and apparently it can go to outer space. And meanwhile, everything over at the Cape is simply for the press to go chase. There's the Cash Landrum incident, the two ladies and the kid that saw this some kind of flying machine, and they both were literally burnt to a crisp.
And one lady had a double mastectomy, I believe.
Yeah. Now, obviously, something happened to these two ladies who were driving back from going bowling on a back road in Texas. Something very strange happened to these two ladies. They certainly aren't crazy.
And of course, nobody's willing to admit anything happened. I mean, they know what they saw. They saw the helicopters.
Well, see, here's the problem I have.
Yeah.
The problem I have is the stretch of road that this craft went over, I understand, has been dug up and replaced four times because there have been high-level radiation from that particular area to the point where it was dug up and replaced four times, the road.
You don't think it's from the asphalt, do you? I mean,
I doubt seriously. And I understand some of the trees were burnt, so on and so forth. Now, how the United States government would have treated these people so shabbily, I don't know. I don't understand. Obviously, something happened to them. Now, what happened to them? We know physically that it happened. We know that the lady's car was burnt. You know, how many times do you go home from bowling or what have you? You drive on a back road, and you wind up getting burnt with third-degree burns. You get cancer, and your car gets burnt. How often does that happen just driving down the road? And the answer is it doesn't.
Right.
Also, there also are what the Westerners, especially a lot of the Western cattle ranchers, call the silent helicopters.
Oh, yeah, right.
These are some kind of devices that come down with very, very bright lights and have picked up cattle in front of people. There are photographs of them that exist, but they can't see any rotor blades,
right.
And they don't make any noise.
Oh, actual photographs of the cattle being picked up?
Yep.
Wow, I wasn't aware of. Is that an alien harvest or anything like that?
I understand so.
Okay. All right. Well, without wasting any more of your time, it was good.
Well, we have a minute left, so let's say this.
Okay.
I'd like to say to those and to our affiliates, our program is here for one purpose only, and that is to tell the American consumer what is coming.
The Russians openly published the report that there were two pilots that encountered some type of an unusual ship, vessel, UFO, whatever you want to call it. And apparently a blue beam came out of the UFO into the cockpit of their airliner. They were able to land the airliner, but subsequently both of the pilots have died. That's all the information I've got for you.
I have your...